Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. A new study released this week finds that children of lesbians are psychologically well-adjusted and had fewer behavioral problems than their peers. Dr. Nanette Gartrell, author of the study and a professor of psychiatry at UC San Francisco, based her findings on a 25-year-long longitudinal study which has followed 84 lesbian couples who conceived through artificial insemination. And Dr. Gartrell joins me now to tell us what we should glean from the study about what kind of parent produces well-adjusted kids. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
I'm a parent. I have a lot to learn from you. All right. We also want our listeners to call in. I hope you won't mind if we have our listeners join in with their observations as well. And we especially want to hear from people who were raised by lesbian moms or even in gay father households. Give us a call. Tell us if you think your experience was different in any way and how you think your experience affected you. Or, of course, if you're a gay father or a lesbian mother, give us a call. Tell us what you think of this new study. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or post a comment at our show page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So your study is really fascinating. It's a longitudinal study, which are always the most interesting. 84 families who went through artificial insemination. This goes back to 1986. So
that's
for
correct.
Almost 25 years, you're checking in on the kids periodically to measure their development. Tell us what you found. What are some of the significant differences? And I guess the first question I really want to ask you to just get a baseline, who are the couples? How did you find them? How did you choose them? Give us a sense of the couples before we get into the families.
Well, I began the study in the era of paper and pencil research, before computers were available in people's homes and before the internet was even a fantasy, at least of mine. And so what I did, I was at Harvard. I was young, energetic at Harvard at the time. It came to my attention that this new social phenomenon was happening. Lesbians were beginning to have children through donor insemination because the sperm banks made it possible for the first time for single heterosexual women and lesbians to have children through donor insemination. So it seemed to me that it would be a terrific opportunity to jump on it and follow the first generation of these families. So then, at that time, the way you do research, unlike now, it's very different. You start by putting up flyers. So I put up flyers all over Boston at various events in order to solicit participants who were planning to become pregnant through donor insemination. I had a colleague who did the same in Washington, D.C., and when I eventually moved to San Francisco, I did the same out there. So these families who lived within 200 miles of those three metropolitan areas originally, now they live a variety of other places as well, volunteered for this study, and I have been following them since that time.
Fascinating. And I guess because of the artificial insemination, there is some degree of financial similarity amongst these families.
Well, no, not necessarily, because some had known donors who provided the sperm for free.
Mm-hmm.
Some purchased sperm, so it varied. And also, in the manuscript, which is available online, anyone can take a look at it. The two groups that we compared most recently are. Families are primarily middle class to upper middle class, and the comparison group is also the same. So
great.
They really are representative of what we actually compared. But it really varies because the method of obtaining the sperm varied within our mothers.
Okay, well, that's important for the next question, which is about the outcomes. What were the findings? What were the outcomes of the kids raised by these moms?
Well, we found that the 17-year-old adolescents, when compared to a normative sample of American youth by age, girls and boys, were rated higher on this standardized test of psychological adjustment than their peers in social, academic, and overall competence, and lower in aggressive behavior, rule-breaking behavior, and social problems.
And you're looking at what? Things like their self-esteem, their confidence? I mean, how do you measure these things?
Well, it's measured on a standardized instrument that is used to score and understand psychological adjustment in individual children and adolescents and in groups for research purposes. It's a test that was developed quite a long time ago, and it's a very comprehensive behavioral assessment that the over 100 items where the mothers are asked, does your child do this, does your child do that, does your child do this other thing? And so they basically provide all answers to each one of these questions, and then their responses are tabulated, and then they're analyzed statistically and then compared with a normative sample.
And the findings, I guess, really apply only to planned lesbian families, you know, where these women who identified as lesbians before they had kids, as opposed to and then chose to have children, or as opposed to people who had children and then came out.
That's exactly right. And when you do research, you want to have the group as consistent in characteristics as possible. So this was the first generation, the first wave of lesbians who were already out, who jumped at the opportunity to conceive and have children and raise children in what is called planned lesbian families. The mothers were lesbian before they inseminated and were out about that.
Let's take a call from Amanda. She's in Westchester. Amanda, you are on WMYC with Dr. Gartrell.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We are well. Thanks for calling.
No problem. I grew up in a lesbian household. There's four girls in my family, including myself. And throughout the years, you know, with my whole family and all four of us girls, six girls in a household, you know, I have two moms, and we were all very well adjusted between just girl issues, especially in high school and when dating guys, and much more open-minded. My parents are very political, and they're actually very conservative, which is something that I don't find very often, but we found ourselves much more well-adjusted, certainly, than a lot of other families, especially children of divorce.
Amanda, like, you mean politically conservative? Or you mean socially?
Yes, politically conservative.
That's quite fascinating.
Yes, they very much are. I mean, my mother, we're actually not children of artificial insemination. My mother was previously married and was divorced. And, you know, I called both my mother's mom, but I have Mom Julie and than my other mom, Robin, and they're almost Republican, actually, which is quite strange, but, yeah, they are very conservative in their political views and things of that nature. Of course, they believe in gay marriage and gay rights and things of that nature, but otherwise, they are very much conservative.
And Dr. Gartrell, thank you, Amanda, so much for your call.
Thank you.
Dr. Gartrell, her experience certainly reflects the findings in your study. Everyone well-adjusted and comfortable with issues of development as they got older. How do you explain the findings, Doctor? Is it that the mothers tend to be very involved with their kids, as Amanda's moms appear to be, or is it because they're more sensitive to the possibility that the kids are going to run into discrimination or that the kids have needs? They're two moms. Moms are in touch. I mean, do you have a sense of why the results were as they were?
Well, I think there are a number of factors. I mean, and since I know these families very well, since I've been following them for 24 years, and I am a psychiatrist, so I have that way of seeing the world as well. Every one of these children is highly desired. There were no mistakes. There were no broken condoms. These were children who the mothers had been waiting for, and the mothers were very eager to parent. And then they did also provide all the ingredients that make for good parenting: love, nurturance, support. But on top of that, as you one of the questions you raised is involvement. These mothers were told repeatedly before their children were born, and I heard it from them because I was there in their homes listening to them and in interviewing them, that they were making a mistake to conceive children and bring children of lesbians into a homophobic world, that their children would experience discrimination and that would represent a hardship. So every step along the way, these mothers were involved in trying to clear the path to make it safe for their children to grow and develop and experience as little hostility and discrimination as possible. And that meant educating the obstetricians, educating the pediatricians, the child care workers, and when it came time for them to go to school, encouraging the development of anti-bullying and diversity appreciation educational programs within the curricula of the schools they attended, which benefited not only their kids, but all kids. And this kind of involvement, according to all the parenting literature, being involved in your child's life, knowing what's going on, being there to have these kinds of very important conversations about appreciation of diversity and difference, are associated with high-quality parenting and high-quality outcomes.
All right, let's take a call from Judy in Long Island. Judy, you're on with Dr. Gartrell. She's the author of The New Study on Lesbian Moms. She joins us from UC San Francisco. Go ahead,
Hi.
Judy.
I'm not lesbian or raised by lesbian family. I should make that clear. But I had a question about your data.
Please.
One is, did you differentiate in the outcomes boys versus girls?
Yes, we did.
And what was that?
The way the data is set up, you compare girls with girls and boys with boys. So what I can do is direct you to the website where you can take a look very closely at what we did, and it's pediatrics.org, and you put in my last name, Gartrell, and the paper will come up, and you can see exactly what we did with statistics.
So could you characterize, was it better for girls than it was for boys, or vice versa?
Basically, the both girls and boys were rated higher in the competencies that I mentioned earlier and lower in the other competencies that I mentioned.
But there is, and Judy, stay on the line because I want to hear your second question. There is always that concern Dr. Gartrell raised about boys and the absence of a father in the home, and that is perhaps what motivates the question.
Well, I was curious.
Well, one of the things that we found in our families and have been found in other studies, which have most of the literature on children raised in lesbian and gay families, is about children, younger children. And that's one of the other reasons why our study is so important, because it is late adolescence. But we do know in our population that corporal punishment was not used as a way of punishing children, and certainly it's not something that's acceptable in American culture at this time. But there are data from other studies of children reared in lesbian families compared to children reared in traditional heterosexual families, where they found evidence of more corporal punishment in the latter, in the traditional heterosexual families, typically done by the heterosexual fathers.
Fascinating. Judy, you had a follow-up?
I guess the way to put it is, I was wondering if any of this could be an artifact of in the children of the families where the mothers were out first and then chose to become parents. Is there a way to compare with other families where they've only become parents by choice? Or could it be an artifact? Could some of this be an artifact of other ways of becoming a parent.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. I thought about that as well, Dr. Gartrell, and thank you, Judy, for your call. You said earlier that the children are highly desired, and that is a factor. And yes. And I thought about it in comparison to other children who are born after artificial insemination to heterosexual couples, where they too are highly desired, and that must be a major factor in their lives as well.
That's an interesting study as well, but one of the important things about that population is that very often heterosexual couples who use donor insemination conceal the information from their children, so that complicates such a comparison. So it certainly would be a very interesting study, and as you can imagine, I have my hands full with 24 years. I'm a physician. I have patients. I have a practice. I'm a teacher, a researcher, so I encourage others to do those kinds of studies as well.
Well, speaking of other possible studies, what about gay father households? I know you didn't study kids raised in that kind of household, but since we raised the issue of boys and lesbian mothers, what about gay fathers? And we see increasingly gay men adopting or raising children in other capacities, perhaps from a sibling who cannot raise a child for whatever reason. What do you think, what would you predict if you had studied those families?
Well, I think that we would be finding very similar results. There are many fewer gay fathers because it's obviously more difficult typically, other than if you're raising a child that one of your relatives cannot care for. Adoption is prohibited for same-sex couples and gay and lesbian adults in many places in the United States, so that limits the numbers. Some gay dads are rearing children with lesbian families, and you know that's another route. There are various routes, but they're fewer in number, and we need more studies. But basically, from the early data and from my clinical experience, I can say that these again are very desired children, and these are very committed parents. So I think that we're likely to find similar results.
Which raises, and I'm very tight on time, but real quickly, do you worry or perhaps hope that the study will be used politically?
I think it's a terrible tragedy in this country that there are so many children in need of loving homes and available for adoption, and so many gay and lesbian individuals and couples who would love to provide those loving homes, and they're prohibited based on assertions that lesbian and gay people cannot provide loving, healthy homes and that their children will be harmed. Our study absolutely does not support that allegation, and I hope that it's seen as the scientific, it has the scientific usefulness that it should have.
Well, it certainly does cut in the other direction completely. 25-year-long longitudinal study by Dr. Nanette Gartrell, the author of the study, and we want to add, as you say, involved in so many other things, including a professor of psychiatry at UC San Francisco. Doctor, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And we will be back in just a few moments. Coming up next, military information leaking during times of war. We're going to talk all about that and how it interfaces with Wikipedia. That's right, WikiLeaks. Stay with us.